Welcome to Stuart Hall in Conversations. I am Ben Carrington. Who was Stuart Hall? Why is he important? And what can his ideas teach us today? In this series, we'll explore the life and work of one of the leading black public intellectuals of his generation and a prominent figure in the emergence of cultural studies. This man is Stuart Hall.
The ideas that he helped formulate have not gone away.
The work has a resonance with contemporary issues, and I also think the work is perhaps a wake-up call or a guide for those of us who are trying to think about how to do intellectual work in this moment of both social movement but also devastation.
The societies in which we live are never one-dimensional. So why would our analytical practices be one-dimensional?
Through conversations with his former students, colleagues, and friends, we'll seek to better understand this groundbreaking writer and academic. This is Stuart Hall in Conversations. Today, I'll talk with the editor-at-large for The Guardian newspaper, the award-winning journalist Gary Young, and author of Another Day in the Death of America.
If you want a sense of what Trump is about, how he might relate to Marine Le Pen or Brexit or any other kind of, you know, these morbid formations that are moving at the moment, I think you could do worse than reach for Stuart's work.
Shortly after Stuart Hall passed away, the journalist Gary Young wrote an article entitled Stuart Hall, A Class Warrior and a Class Act. In an article, Gary Young says the following about Stuart Hall. He was not interested in sounding clever, but in being useful and making a difference. His intellectual product was not a performance, but an engagement, a genuine desire to understand the world as it is, not as he would like it to be, and to help change it by offering insights and interventions that might help make that world possible. I caught up with Young at the Guardian offices in North London. Gary, when you said that Stuart Hall's work and his intellectual product was not a performance but an engagement, what did you mean by that?
Well, there's a style of being an academic in this moment, of being a kind of star academic and saying things that are catchy, writing things that are like, you know, dangling baubles that make people kind of sit up and think you're clever. And that's not what he was about. He wasn't about being famous or being fated even. He was about trying to think of what it was that we needed to know and how it was we needed to think in order to make sense of our time. And that's what drove him. Which is why, you know, when you saw him come into a room, he would almost appear without trace. You know, if you see other more flashy academics come into the room, they like the bustle, they like people turning around. And yeah. Where Stuart would, you know, was this kind of incredibly soft, nurturing presence. He kind of had no interest in dominating a room, even though there was a way in which he did, because you knew you were, just knowing that you were in his presence was a kind of, you know, was a big thing, but he didn't make it a big thing. And so, yeah, he was serious about his craft. I don't imagine that he turned up to do talks, as I've seen other academics do, and just kind of crack one off, just, you know, golden oldies. That just wasn't the way that he did it. He engaged.
So each talk, each event would have been an intervention for him, like he would have crafted something for that moment, depending on the topic.
Certainly that's what it felt like. He was a serious person at a time when being serious is not necessarily seen as the most important thing you can be, and that came across.
When was the first time you became aware of Stuart Hall, of his work?
The first time I became aware of him was on Open University, and I must have been 7 or 8 or something, and I remember seeing this bearded black man, black and white, you know, talking about things I had no comprehension of. That's the first time I'd have ever seen him. And then the next time was when New Times came out with, you know, Marxism Today. And what I liked about Marxism Today was that they were trying to think of new ways of understanding the moment. What I didn't like about it was that quite often what it came up with was, and therefore we should abandon this, you know, this, that and the other. And I think it was telling, though not necessarily entirely their fault, that an awful lot of what Marxism Today did ended up working for New Labour. So there was a problem there, I thought. But I was still thought the project was a good idea. And I remember reading Sivanandan's takedown, quite brutal takedown of both Stuart and New Times, as I remember it. And kind of wondering, I would have been young, you know, in my early 20s, wondering which side I was on, really. I did think that Siva had a point. I also thought he missed a point, too.
Yeah. In the piece that you wrote for The Guardian, you go on to say that, in relation to Stuart Hall, you say, "I never knew him well enough to call him a mentor. We had lunch a couple of times, sat on a few panels together, and met at a few conferences. And the term role model is too sterile. But to see a black man of his generation, of any generation, excel in a world of ideas and emerge with both his professional integrity and humanity intact was a personal inspiration." Mm. So you met Stuart a few times, and what was he like, and how has that kind of helped or shaped your own career and your own writing?
Well, he was really generous. You know, he was just very generous with his time. I remember I did a piece about the Notting Hill Carnival, and I interviewed him for that. And, you know, he was quite funny. And when I had not long started writing, I remember doing some talk at Goldsmiths, and he was there, and he came up to me and said, I really like your stuff. So it was a kind of very...
And how did that make you feel, having Stuart Hall kind of say that?
I didn't know quite what a big deal it was at the time, but I knew... I recognised him, you know, and he was quite avuncular, you know, just quite encouraging, and like I say, I was always, when I met him, he was also kind of quite playful. So when I met with him to talk about Notting Hill Carnival and something else, I can't remember, he was just kind of quite funny and quite easy to talk to. It wasn't intimidating. And by that time I knew more who he was, and so it was a bit more performance for me, you know. Given the timing of the large presence of black British people here, there just aren't that many people of Stuart's generation who were just able to do what he did. I mean, there were just too many barriers. And so to get to where he got without any obvious sense of grievance, and there's good reason for black people to have grievances, I'm not saying they shouldn't, but somehow he got through it not obviously embittered. And I'm sure there were setbacks, irritations, all of those things, but he seemed happy in his skin. Not obviously embittered, not obviously insecure, didn't look like he needed to put someone else down in order to build himself up, still with a spirit of generosity. And so to think, all right, so these things are possible. You can get through this and do the things you want to do and say the things you want to say with those qualities, which is just not obvious. Still not obvious. And I don't know how he did it. And, of course, some of that's projection, so I don't know that he did do it. He may well have been, you know, riven with... I'm sure he was riven with a series of anxieties. He was a human being. Why wouldn't he be? But I particularly loved the way he was happy to complicate everything, and without using that as an excuse for inaction, but just to say, well, there's more going on than that, isn't there? There's always, you know, because there's always more going on than that. And, you know, there are multiple identities, and I remember something he wrote about nationalism, saying it's not necessarily a right-wing or a left-wing thing in this moment. It's kind of weak, you know, you have to actually look at what it's doing in its particular place, all of that stuff I found liberating, because it gave you the space to say, I don't know, intelligently.
And he wrote an essay which was subtitled Thinking at the Limits, and it always seems to me that's been one of his like motifs, like thinking at the limits of what we know, how can you push the boundaries so you don't kind of fall back into either easy theoretical positions or political positions, mm. which also does mean kind of critiquing your own positions as well, which I think was maybe like a hallmark of his thinking, and in some ways maybe even a hallmark of your own kind of journalistic writing as well, where you kind of challenge the precepts that lay behind the positions that you hold. Would you say that's a fair analysis?
Yeah, I mean, you were never in any doubt, I was never in any doubt, that there were some basic precepts there about what he believed that he wasn't going to say, and therefore we should all vote Tory, or, you know, therefore global capitalism is the best thing that ever... He wasn't going to say that. There was a moral principle, political foundation there. But then there was a serious interaction about, well, how do we get there? And just saying things that make us feel comfortable is not going to do it for us, is it? And, you know, my personal journey is that when I was 15, I joined a Trotskyist group, and I was in that for a year. And I left it before, almost precisely that reason. It was like, well, you can say these things. They're not getting us anywhere, are they? And so there was something about the project that was like, do you want to win or not? Because if you want to win, these are the kind of things we have to, and what do we want to win? And we're going to have to be more nimble, more versatile, less dogmatic if we're going to get where we want to go. And actually, that's always been the basis of the, broadly speaking, of this ideology, whether you call it Marxism or socialism or, you know, progressive thought, is you have to apply it to the world that you live in. And there was also something that he did in Policing the Crisis that I liked, where he just said, we're not going to give solutions here. Not that, you know, there might not be some, but we don't consider it our role to do that. We're going to highlight what the problem is. And there are other people who can talk about, you know, what they think. And I also like that, not because that's what you always want to do, but because that is a very legitimate way to be involved and not to be drawn into, you know, well, maybe if we had police cameras, that would be better for Black Lives Matter, or maybe if they just carried a stick that maimed you rather than guns, that would be better. Like, we're going to have to do better than that.
You mentioned Policing a Crisis, which was one of his key texts from the 1970s, in which he outlines the ways in which the underlying economic crisis of England at the time of the United Kingdom produces these political effects, and how this kind of law and order approach is used to clamp down on the so-called street crime of mugging. But you yourself have also spent many years in the United States, 12 years or so, for The Guardian as their US-based correspondent. Would you say that Stuart Hall's ideas, concepts, way of thinking, way of kind of doing politics has relevance to some of the contemporary issues that we see now in the US? Or is it kind of UK-based, UK-focused? Does Hall's work and ideas travel in any way that make sense for the US?
Yeah. I mean, certainly Policing the Crisis, this notion of, you know, if you have a massively unequal society and it's massively segregated and it's deindustrialized and uneducated, and your answer to all of those problems is not to educate, industrialize, employ, house, but to police, then that the central contradiction went out, you know, that there's no other way for this to work, really. And in that sense, even though Thatcher's Britain and Obama's America, one could argue, are different in many, many ways, in this specific way, they're really quite similar. And I mean, I do think with Stuart's work, generally speaking, so that one I do think translates quite concretely, but I, for me, for others it might be different. For me, what he contributes is a way of thinking. I mean, his particular thoughts and critiques are useful sometimes for that moment and sometimes beyond that moment, but it's the way of thinking that's the most useful. So post-Brexit in Britain, we're thinking, well, what did those people who voted to leave the European Union, what did they want? How did they see themselves? How should we try and understand them? What do we not know about them? How can we win them over? What could we as an intellectual class or a political class offer by way of seduction, almost, to draw? What do we do to draw a section of those people who voted out in what, you know, would be the central way in which? So, I didn't think about this consciously, like, what would Stuart have thought? But I saw a lot of things saying, you know, this is a revolt against the elites. And I remember writing a piece about this very thing and thinking, was it a revolt against the elites, actually? You know, it seems that, first of all, both sides were elite. Boris Johnson on one side, David Cameron on the other side. And secondly, my experience, people weren't... That's not how people were expressing themselves in their frustration. And I think it seems like it was an ambivalence towards the elites. And then pursuing that argument for a bit. And that, while I'm not saying... And I thought, what would Stuart think? You know, Stuart would think this and so on. I do think that there is some of him in that, in me, of a kind of desire to problematize and interrogate things you don't like, things you do like, and wherever possible, to not fall back on the kind of salves of cliché.
You gave a talk for the Stuart Hall Foundation launch. You were the keynote speaker in November 2015. And in your talk, you say the following. You say, if politics is the art of the possible, then radical politics, the kind of politics that Stuart Hall espoused, must at the very least engage with, showcase and promote new possibilities. And right now, we are in the need of imagining and articulating new possibilities. For those, you know, especially involved in politics in the US and elsewhere, should people go to Stuart Hall now? You know, if you're an American listener to this program, what could they take from Stuart Hall in order to think about imagining and articulating new political possibilities?
Yeah, I think you could always go to Stuart Hall and find a way of thinking, if not at times specific thought, that will kind of open things up for you. I think his critique of Thatcherism, having coined the phrase, and some of the stuff that he wrote, you know, quite early on, has a relevance to trying to understand neoliberal order, has a lot of relevance. And that works both here and in America, you know, in Britain and in America. I think that Stuart wrote a lot about populism and identities, including white identity. And if you want a sense of what Trump is about, how he might relate to Marine Le Pen or Brexit or any other kind of, you know, these morbid formations that are moving at the moment, I think you could do worse than reach for some of that. I think his understanding of nationalism and national identity and that report that he wrote for the Labour government, I think in 98?
Yeah, the Perrick Report.
The Perrick Report.
Into multicultural Britain.
I still think, had they tried, had Labour, the Labour government, toughed that out. I had time when I had a massive majority, nothing to fear, but lived in fear of the Mail and so on. Scotland would be in a different place right now. England would be in a different place. I think White Britain would be in a different place. So I think we're living in this very volatile time. All sorts of things that we never thought would happen, happening. Trump, Sanders, Brexit. These kind of vile iterations of fundamentalism. China, Russia. And you can either kind of reach for some kind of driftwood and just cling on to it. You say it's just capitalism, or it's just immigrants, or it's just this, or it's that. Or you can build yourself a raft and try and, you know, kind of work out something a bit more sustainable that will help you navigate, you know, where do we go from here? And that's what he offers, really. Particularly now, because it's particularly volatile and particularly unpredictable, and people are behaving in ways that traditional roots of understanding how people behave, they're motivated by money or they're motivated by this, or aren't really working. Most political formations, Republicans, Democrats, Labour, Conservative, are imploding. The margins are growing, the mainstream's shrinking, large numbers of people are just falling out of the organised, standard political system altogether, and then doing completely other things, some of which are terrifying, some of which are entirely kind of inspirational. And you're not going to get to a place of understanding what that's about by using old methods. And ultimately, Stuart was about renewal. It was about renewing ideas, ideologies, strategies that engaged with the moment rather than made you feel good.
And funny, when Stuart passed away, how did you feel? And do you feel his loss even today? How, when you think back on Stuart Hall, what are your memories that come back to you?
It's damning that when people die, you think of yourself, don't you? Quite often. And I had been told by a few Stuart's friends. Stuart had written a lovely blurb for me for one of my books. And I happened to be in London for a summer, and I said to someone, I'd really like to see him. And they said, oh, I'm sure he'd really like to see you. He was ill. I was like, I don't really want to bother him. And then that person kind of checked with him, and he said, no, he would really, you know, be really nice. And I just felt like it would be bothering him. So I didn't. And then he died. And I don't think I killed him, but I do regret that. And the last engagement I had with him, which was kind of sweet, was that I was doing a joke for the World Cup in 2006. I had this joke, and it was called the Ethical World Cup. And I would pit whatever teams were playing that day, and I would say, you know, who you should support ethically, you know. So on the basis of their foreign policy or their domestic policy, or, you know, and I would, you know, match the two teams that were actually playing and say, well, you've got to support Ghana against America. You know, look what Ghanaian government has done. And he was watching the World Cup with his nephew, and he had disagreed with my final analysis, which it was France versus Italy for the World Cup final.
Yeah.
And I had said, given the French government, what the French government's done and so on and so forth, you really got to support Italy, because Italy, I think, had a... And he, very jokingly, had kind of emailed me and said, yeah, I've been talking about this with my grandson. We think you can land one wrong. And there was a large number of people who didn't even understand it was a joke, or didn't want to understand it was a joke, or didn't get the joke, or took me to task for outrageous comparisons of this or that. And so it said a lot that basically he'd been following it the whole time and had the capacity to kind of see the joke in it. And then was like, yeah, but you go. And his line was, if you look at the racial composition of the French team, it would do so much more for France than an Italian victory would. I think that was the last engagement.
And do you miss him? Do you miss ideas when these things are happening now? Do you think, I wish Stuart was around, or is that to engage in a certain type of nostalgia that's not useful?
I miss him, because I didn't know him so well. But we definitely lost them. I mean, look at what's going on right now. Governments falling, opposition collapsing, Islamism, Brexit, Trump, Sanders, Clinton.
We'd like to come, but I don't want to.
There was never a time when we didn't need him, and arguably we need him now more than ever, but I guess that was always true.
The award-winning journalist Gary Young, an author of Another Day in the Death of America. Coming up in our next conversation, I'll talk with the award-winning columnist Suzanne Moore about what it was like to work with Hall on the political magazine Marxism Today, what she learned from Hall's presence, and how his ideas influence her views on politics and society even today.
You've been listening to Stuart Hall in Conversations, presented by Ben Carrington and produced at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas, with special thanks to Maggie Tate, Anima Ajapong, Jake Perlman, and Todd Callahan. For KUT, I'm Rebecca McEnroy. Thanks for listening.